Good evening. My name is Bill Miles, and I'm the city librarian for Madison Heights. Today is September 28, 1989. The time is 8:45. This evening, we are going to interview Ann Edwards, a member of the Madison Heights Historical Commission. Madison Heights history is filled with strong, capable women. Mrs. Edwards is one of these individuals. And the first question for this evening would be for you to please state your name and present address for the interview.
My name is Ann Edwards, and I live in the Madison Park Apartments, Madison Heights, Michigan.
Ann, according to our research, you were married without children. Please give us the name of your husband for the record.
My husband was Charles B. Edwards.
Ann, you were selected as an interviewee as a result of your involvement in the early formation of Madison Heights. How long have you lived in Madison Heights, and why did you move here originally?
I moved here in 1946 after I married Mr. Edwards. We purchased a half acre of property south of 11 Mile Road on Brigg Avenue and built a home there.
Okay. We were originally part of a portion of South Oakland County called Royal Oak Township. What area did Royal Oak Township cover?
Royal Oak Township covered what is presently known as Madison Heights. It included 6 acres in the 10-mile Greenfield area, and then the what is now known as Royal Oak Township, the 8-mile Wyoming area. We were geographically separated, but we were all Royal Oak Township.
So you were geographically separated.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. What was it like living in Royal Oak Township before incorporation? In particular, what were the services like, the roads, especially in this portion that we now call Madison Heights?
The services were nil, and the roads were horrible. We never knew what it was to park on our roads in the spring or winter time. We had to park up on DeQuinder and walk into our homes. In the spring, you had flooding. You had wide open ditches on both sides of the roads, and there never really was any road service. As we start to incorporate, the township officials did hire a garbage service. They contracted for it, and we had once a week garbage that we had to pay for ourselves, by the way. And there was no water. There was water south of 11, but in the 12 Mile Road area, there wasn't any water. They used to have to carry their water in. And we lived here, it was like almost 48, from 46 to 48 before we had a telephone. We didn't have gas. We had to have oil furnaces. It wasn't the most pleasant of surroundings.
Now, you indicated originally that the two sections were separated.
Yes.
Did the southern section fare any better as far as services than the northern section?
Well, the northern section, they were mostly homes, or you could say even shacks and businesses. The constituencies were black people. They were brought up here during the war. They worked in factories, and they had this community. And it was your typical black community. The 10 Mile Road Greenfield area was owned by a doctor McDonald. And he had visions of making a fortune on this small portion. And then we had our area. The problem was, because of the makeup of the West 8 Mile Road section, we spent 90% of our funds for police protection over there, and only 10% in our area. We had to have 2 police forces. We had 18 policemen in our Madison Heights area and 22 over in the 8 Mile Wyoming area. We had 2 police chiefs. We had Bob Richardson in our area. We had Robert Skidmore, who was a white man over in the black area. So it really, was very difficult, very costly to keep that portion up.
Okay. So really, why was the Madison Heights Civic Association established? You kind of answered the question.
Well, too, that we had felt by incorporating we could provide services.
Okay.
We could give them the roads they wanted. We could bring in water into the portions that didn't have water. And services that would cost less than carrying the two areas as one. And we would attend township meetings every week, probably, and had all these complaints. And the supervisor of the township would say, well, it isn't time yet. It isn't time yet. We felt it was time.
And
something had to be done.
You attended as members of the Madison Civic Association?
No, we attended first as just
citizens. Okay.
And then the more we waited and the angrier we became, a group got together with Daryl Davis, John Macrina. Of course, this is Mr. and Mrs. Davis, and Mr. and Mrs. Macrina, Mr. and Mrs. Krenn, my husband and I, and Virginia Salbert and her husband. And we decided we were going to form an association and get people interested, and our home was the focal point for all the meetings of this association.
I think it's kind of interesting that we had the name Madison in the name of the association even before we had the name of the city, Madison Heights. You actually named yourselves after the Madison School District.
Well, the name was brought in years ago by Leroy Ainslie when he was gung-ho on starting a corporation or even a village. But he became one of the cohorts of George Horky and decide he wasn't interested then anymore in incorporation.
Okay.
But he had the name originally.
What part did you play in the Madison Civic Association, and who were some of its members? You answered that already. What support did you receive from Royal Oak Township officials when you discussed the association's desire to incorporate North Royal Oak Township and become a city?
Well, the members of Royal Oak Township, the individuals, were very charming people, but they were not an educated people. They were politically minded, so we thought it would only be fair we went to the NAACP and approached them and told them of our plans of what we were going to do in our section and asked them to start finding leaders in that community and for them to incorporate at the same time. Well, our reply from the NAACP was there was nobody over there that could be a leader. And I guess it's quite evident. Look at Royal Oak Township today, you know.
Okay, while your efforts were being made to incorporate, were other cities interested in the area known as Madison Heights?
They were. And this is one of the reasons why we were interested in hastening this project, because we had to worry about Hazel Park. Hazel Park was always wanting to annex our portion. Hazel Park didn't have the tax base or the potential for growth that we had. And Dr. Bauer, you remember Daryl?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and Politeer, they were always calling our group in, the men from our group, and discussing annexation with them. And we had decided we were better off to go on our own. We didn't need Hazel Park either. They couldn't offer us anything, so.
Just out of curiosity, do you feel that if you would have gone together, you would have made a larger city, it would have made you a little stronger or not?
No. We always felt that, possibly out of snobbery, we had the greater potential over here, even among the individuals, the residents.
Which is obvious even
yes.
today.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. What were the steps that had to be taken to incorporate the present area of Madison Heights? We've talked about incorporation. What did you actually have to do to go through or to get ready for this process of incorporation?
Well, we had to circulate petitions and call for an election for incorporation at the same time you elect your charter commission. Southfield was incorporating at the same time, and they were holding a meeting. So my husband and I went over to Southfield to listen to what they had to say about incorporation. And there we listened to Harry Young, who was the attorney for the group. And after the meeting, I went up and I asked him if he would be interested in coming to a meeting at our home when we would have the members of the association there and possibly assisting us in going through this incorporation. So he came, he agreed, he came to the house, and he looked at the petitions we had started to circulate, and he says, this will never do. You must have a map of the area you're going to incorporate. So he gave us some advice, and then we said, what do you charge? And we said, he said, we'll do it this way. If you win the incorporation, I would like the city attorney. So that's the deal we cut. If we won incorporation, he would be city attorney. However, he would guide us all through all the elections, the writing of the charter, and incorporation of the city. So we started to circulate petitions, and they go up to the Board of Supervisors. And they were approved one meeting and then disapproved the next meeting, because in the meantime, the township supervisor and officials weren't sitting back and just accepting all this. They were doing their own little maneuvering. And George Horkey gave property to the school district of Royal Oak, where the Mark Twain School is, and that changed. That changed the map of the city of Madison Heights. So our petitions were null and void, and we had to recirculate petitions, which we did. And they were approved by the, at that time was the Board of Supervisors, now County Commissioners. And we went forward with an election. It was a wild election. I mean, people had very strong feelings. You know, my next door neighbor was Robert Skidmore, police chief of Royal Oak Township. And no way did he want us to incorporate. We had signs that we would go out and put up, vote yes for incorporation. And then about 3 o'clock in the morning, we'd get a call from the police department saying they slapped no signs over our yes signs. So then we'd go out and put them up again. You know, and this, it was a very, very active campaign. It really was. And we were successful. We were successful in winning the incorporation and electing a 9 charter member commission. The members were Daryl Davis, John McCrina, Charles Edwards, Ted Crenn, 2 very, very adamant labor people, Earl Anderson and Stan Weiss, Virginia Salberg, Willie Pierce. Willie Pierce was a lovable person. He had the gas station at the corner of Greg and John R. And a big, huge man. And everybody liked Willie. He was elected. And George Sargent. George lived on Tawas. And he had all the interests of the people north of 12 Mile Road. And he was just a good individual. So that was our original charter of members. Ted Crenn was elected chairman of the Charter Commission, Virginia Salberg secretary. Virginia Salberg didn't have any secretarial skills. I was secretary of the Civic Association, so I was volunteered to be secretary of the Charter Commission. This is all volunteer. Everything's volunteer here. Nobody received a dime.
Weren't you the first acting city clerk?
That's after we incorporated and won the Charter Commission, yeah.
Okay.
So, Harry Young decided to use the charter of the city of Lathrop as our model. And at that time, I was employed for a company on East Jefferson. And every day on a lunch hour, I went downtown to the First National Building where he was and took the dictation of what, because this commission met every night to get everything ready for the commission meeting. That was day after day. And the charter met our charter group met. They didn't agree. Many, many words exchanged. And the two labor people, they wanted to make everything partisan. And the other members wanted to be a more universal group, more to the interest of the residents, not just certain groups. So we went round and round, didn't we, Joe? Young felt that expediency was of the utmost, and it was very important. We had 2 years to write a charter, but he felt it was very important to do it in 6 months or less. So we met with various groups. We met with the police and fire. We met with the township employees to get a feeling of what people really wanted in this charter. And we thought we wrote a good charter. We had Don Smith, who was from the Municipal League, as consultant. He had helped other cities on charters. And we were having a problem with Willie Pierce and Earl Anderson and Stanley Weiss. They did not like the completed charter. And the police did not like the completed charter. The group had thought that having a civil service status would be better than having them come under Act 78, the state act. And the police and fire felt, no, that they didn't want politicians interfering with their departments. So the first election was held, the first election was January 17th when the commission was elected. In June, we held an election, and the charter was defeated. I want to backtrack. The expediency of this thing is when they saw they were having problems with the police in Act 78, Young decided he wanted the Charter Commission to close, and he wanted that charter up to the governor immediately. So I spent a Saturday and a Sunday typing the city charter, 6 copies on a manual typewriter, and we got it up to Governor Williams on Monday. I never forgot that weekend, believe me. So the first charter was defeated.
What year is it?
1955. And then they rewrote the charter. They compromised. They put in Act 78 for the police and fire. They did not accept partisan elections. They insisted on nonpartisan elections. And the second charter, we worked hard. It was accepted. Darryl will tell you, it was such a hot argument that he had the deputy sheriffs out at the precincts. The first ballots were all written ballots, paper ballots. The polls opened at 7. And it was 7:30 the next morning when we finished counting ballots. When they found out that the charter had been accepted and we were then officially a city, none of the township officials showed up the next day and none of the township employees. They were told they had to stay home because there was no township anymore, except over in West 8 Mile.
Where was the original township building?
On John R.
That is what now, Gateway?
No, it's next to Gateway, which is where the Chaldean Club is now.
Oh, okay.
That was the original.
So no one showed up for work at that building?
No.
They were what, afraid?
Well, they were told that they didn't have jobs.
Oh, I see.
So here we are, you know, as green as grass, and we don't have, through the election, we had run Lloyd Ferguson as mayor. We had a mayor, we had councilmen, but we didn't have any employees. Every asset we had was in control of West 8 Mile community. We didn't have bank accounts, we didn't have anything.
That was part of what you had to do after incorporation. They had to divide the assets, but they had what, 2 years to do it?
Yes.
So they
yes.
hung on to our assets.
Right.
And made us wait.
So, John McCrina was, the group kept meeting the council every night and to decide where they were going, what they were going to do, and who they would hire as employees. We will always have a warm feeling for Hank Shanka. He was our first city employee, and he's the one that came out and said, I will run your DPW, and were we grateful to see him. Of course, the police and fire stayed, you know. Another thing is, we could not use township voting records. We had to go out door to door and re-register everybody in Madison Heights. Yeah, we went door to door, and then I would come home and type all the things. Because I had a job. I mean, you know, this was just a hobby.
And I did only 8 hours a day.
Right. But, you know, the support we had. I mean, you can't believe it. Helen was out. Lois was out. People did this for us. And they were so enthusiastic. They
Helen,
really
Helen, you mentioned, is Helen Hennessy and Lois Myers.
Right.
Right.
Right. And it was fun time.
There
it was
a lot
busy.
Of people that
helped us. Oh, yeah.
Well, you mentioned something about all of the help that you got. You not only had help from people, you had help from businesses. Madison
Heights
has always been a business-oriented community.
Financially, we had the backing of 11 Mile Collision, John R. Lumber, Mike Herzina, Mold-O-Matic.
City Bank
was really great. They were just coming into this area. And when we formed this association and had to turn out literature and everything, they gave us a store, a vacant store on John R., where George's One Stop is now. They gave us that store, unlimited use, mimeograph machines, and we used it. They were really great supporters of ours. So we were very fortunate there.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And the money to pay our payroll. Remember, they lend us the money to work.
Well, they guaranteed the loan.
Yeah.
Yeah. What happened, too, is I know Horky and his crowd got great satisfaction out of this. The first Monday morning, down John R. came all these cars, and all Royal Oak Township people marched into our city hall and took it over. And there wasn't anything we could do.
Because they held the assets.
They held the assets, you know. And so, in the meantime, we hired... When I say we, I mean the council and the mayor hired Don Smith, who had assisted us in the incorporation as city manager. Don was a very brilliant young man, but his downfall was, I think, lack of experience with politicians. You know, he thought he could, if somebody disagreed, he thought he could force his way through, and you can't do that. There's compromise. But Don was really great. And then, of course, a lot of people, including Civic Association members and including Bill Hoffman, thought they should have jobs with the city. And one of the jobs Bill wanted was city treasurer. And Bill's a very fine young man. He had come from Kentucky. He was working for Pontiac Motor, and he had umpteen million acquaintances in town, and he did help us a lot. But no way can you turn over a position like that. So Don came out with every position had to be filled by testing. They used the Michigan Municipal League test, and that's how everybody received their promotions or jobs. And we hired Merle Chamberlain as clerk. But prior to this period, there wasn't any clerk in City Hall, so what I would do is, after hours, drop in and do their business letters and take all the minutes at the council meetings and do them. Like I said, it was a hobby.
Yeah,
so I really welcomed Don Smith with open arms. In the interim, before Don Smith was hired, also, city employees had to be paid. And we had no funds. So Harry Young and I would go over on a Monday night to Royal Oak Township to a council meeting and then be put on the agenda and have to beg for money to bring back, you know. And here we are, two that really, really shone out in the audience. You could tell that, you know. Anyway, Elwood Dickens was supervisor then, and he was a charming gentleman. Yeah, he was a very charming gentleman. And we did get the money every week, but, it got to be a bit much. When they came over and took over the township hall, or city hall, they weren't very cooperative. First of all, they didn't know anything about government. And then they just took over, and they were very nasty to our employees. They were dragging their feet on this splitting of the assets. It finally came down to where we officially receive 85% and they receive 15%. But they were getting so obnoxious that Don Smith petitioned the council if he could go out and rent a building, because he could not work with these people. They took over the typewriters, they took everything over. And then Bath charged Royal Oak Township for this. They, when they got wind of that, they were very, very upset. So they moved out on a Saturday morning. They took everything with them, including the water fountains off the wall, and left us with bare walls. So we went out and purchased, the council went out and purchased office equipment and started up officially at that time.
And who was handling the division of the assets? Was that Harry Young? Was he working on that?
He was working on that, but the state handles it.
Handles it, okay.
Yeah. Yeah. Harry Young did a great thing for Madison Heights. He hired Jim Sal as the first city engineer. Jim was very brilliant, and he is the one that started setting up the planning, the 14 Mile Road industrial area, putting in roads. They put roads in the south end because it's the only way people could even get to their houses. And putting in sewers and ditches. He really did a brilliant job. He was worth everything. You know, people were good to us, too. They didn't overcharge us. They all seemed to take delight in helping us, that they really worked for Bayside.
Creating a community.
Mm-hmm. Really. So
members on the council had charge over different departments. Some of them, didn't they? Because there were people, they weren't department heads over some of the departments.
No,
right?
Darryl was in charge of police and fire because he had a rapport with that group. And he knew what was going on, and he knew what their complaints were, and he handled that. Then we had George Sargent, whose big thing was roads. George was a wonderful man. People took advantage of him. If they have your phone number, as you know, and you're a politician, they will call you at all hours. George would get calls at 2 in the morning that somebody was stuck on their road, and he would get up, get a wheelbarrow, fill it full of material, and personally take it down to this person and fill in the road. He was really great. John McCrina he wasn't employed. He was the first acting city manager, but he had the most time to spend around town. And he more or less oversaw businesses and things like that. So,
once again, everybody just pitched in.
Right.
To get things done.
Right. Yeah.
Now, you were telling me that we were actually a city with improvements and everything in how, what, a year?
A year and a half.
We had water.
They gave the
streets.
Right. They brought in water. They worked that through the builders. The builders assisted them in bringing in water north of the 12 mile. You had Spoon and Shacket up there and the Carum brothers. And they did the first subs, and they were the ones that actually paid for it, and then the city paid them back.
Talk about a city of progress.
You know, the only thing is, you give people sewers, you give them roads, you give them water, but you give them assessment bills. And this is something that people didn't think about. They thought all these things are going to come because you said incorporation. And that's what defeated the first council, why they weren't reelected.
You know. We spent a lot of time down in Detroit Water Works just getting the big line that we got now through Livernois.
Mm-hmm.
did that in that first year?
Yeah. Oh, okay. Those people worked hard. They really did. They did a tremendous job.
We had people coming from New York on this industrial deal over here to Quinder at, 13 miles or 14 miles? 14. Yeah. And millions of dollars was flying into this city just to, on that deal alone. Where all those companies are today, and they're all coming to individual good business places.
I think it's interesting, too, that this was always a working class community, but you didn't have, you were trying not to write a charter that was partisan. You wanted to keep politics out of the charter.
I've been through the union wars and rackets and things like that, and I didn't want to see anything but nonpartisan government.
Clean government.
That's right. I vote, even today, I vote for a Democrat or a Republican. I vote for the man. I don't vote for the, I never did believe in that.
That really is. Yes. That really is.
What we're going through now is no different than two people getting a divorce. They fight like the victims, and each one ends up with a little bit of it.
Mm-hmm.
So it's just like getting divorced.
So, like you said, this community held promise right from the beginning.
I also give credit to Harry Young and who he brought in.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he brought in top-notch people, and he had the ins with business people. So he could bring in people that had visions of what the 14-mile road could be like,
mm-hmm.
and also to get people interested in investing.
Well, wasn't it that time that he was city attorney for Redford, wasn't it?
Yes.
At the same time?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. So he had the experience, you know.
Now that you're mentioning some people like Harry Young, just off the top of your head, just a few things. I'm gonna give you some names. Can you just talk about some anecdotes or maybe some information about each one of these people? Most of the people were on the original charter commission and on the city council, so you're familiar with all of them. Earl M. Anderson. What can you tell us about Earl?
Well, Earl was labor, UAW, very very adamant partisan Democrat. Intelligent, but he had tunnel vision. He just his idea of what he thought this city should be, and he would never compromise. And he was rough and tough. I mean, some of those charter meetings really got quite wild at times. And Darryl, you know, he had to pack his gun because you never knew what was going to happen, especially with Earl Anderson. Earl was a good person. He had great potential, but he was quite difficult, wasn't he?
I just got through as a kid going through the Purple Gang War. When his gold wing fights off with that, and I didn't want to see that happen out here. And that's about all they would try to do with us, just push us around. That's all.
Yeah.
So we didn't push.
And Earl was the type, too, he didn't care if you were male or female. If he threatened you, he'd knock you down. He was going to knock you down.
Okay, you were talking about Darryl Davis. A couple of things about Darryl Davis.
Well, Darryl has always been a very sincere person. He owned cleaners. He was a businessman throughout the years. He's always been a person of great integrity. And he really fights for this city. Especially, like I said, he has this affinity with the police and fire department, and he really goes to bat for those
even
gentlemen
to this day. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Theodore Kren.
Well, Ted lived on Alger. He worked for Dodge Motor. He was very, very good. He was sick of the conditions of the Royal Oak Township. He wanted improvements. And he had visions of going on to other political aspects in this city.
Did he go on?
He became mayor, and then he didn't run for re-election after that.
Okay.
In fact, he left the city.
John B. Macrina.
John, too, lived above the 12-mile road. He lived on Girard. And it was we all had the same complaints, that you know, there were so many things wrong that we wanted to right. And John was another feisty little one, but he really, really had this vision of what the city was going to be like and worked towards it.
Willie Pierce, you mentioned Willie D. Pierce.
Yes. Willie was a huge, huge person. And he was of Southern extraction. He had the gas station at Greg and John R. He was a very community-minded person, and he did a lot of charity work.
Had a lot of power, too, didn't he?
He did. He controlled the Southern vote, wouldn't you say? Yes.
George Sargent.
Well, George Sargent, like I said, he was a painter by trade, and he, too, was just another interested citizen. But he was so sincere. You know, he really did what he set out to do. And he was very good.
Now we come to Virginia Solberg.
Virginia is was a very strong person. She had very definite ideas. She worked nepotism overtime. I mean, she took care of her own. And she owned a restaurant, the corner of Greg, with her husband. Art was very supportive of Virginia, but it definitely was Virginia's show. And she was very good, and she loved politics. She really did. And she stayed with it till the bitter end.
Stanley Weiss.
Stanley was Earl Anderson's cohort, and he's still out looking for a fight. Yes, to this day. He's another UAW
labor,
man.
Labor supporter.
Yes, and then, too, see, these gentlemen were involved in the UAW when they were organizing, and they are listed in the records as communists, because anybody that was in the UAW and did all this organizational bit were listed as communists. And Stan is still out looking for a fight.
Well, I had a fight that's in the center.
He never stops.
Don B. Smith.
Don, like I say, was a very, very intelligent, capable young man. He was an only child, and he thought he knew politics, but he didn't. And what he did was try to split the First Consul in order to get his ideas over. And it backfired on him. You can't run a city that way.
Madison Heights resident?
Well, no.
Okay.
He became a Madison Heights resident.
Okay.
That was, he moved into Madison Heights. But he came from the Chicago area.
Okay. Another dynamic individual, Bill Huffman.
Bill, he's the charming Kentucky Colonel. One day, you know, it was a knock on the door, and there was Bill Huffman, and he says, "I understand you have association, and I'm interested, blah, blah, blah." So we invited Bill in. And Bill is a trip. I mean, he is an individual in his own right. And he is very enthusiastic. And he, too, had a group of Southerners, that really Southern people, that he knew and helped us. And he got out there and pounded doors. He, as I said, he wanted city treasurer, but he didn't make it because he didn't pass the test. But he continued on into council, mayor, and then my husband and I are responsible for him getting deeper into politics because we took him up to a Democratic convention in Grand Rapids. And Bill was in his glory. He stayed up all night just talking to people, and that's where he had vision for state rep was his goal. When Bill first ran for state rep, everybody, of course, go back and think, we were a lot younger in those days. He formed the Huffman Bells. And it was all women that would go out, and at that time there was still the Federal Department Store and the Kresge Store at 8 Mile and DeQuinder. And we would go up there with these stupid lampshade hats and, you know, the Huffman Bells written on us. He would hire a horse and carriage to take us up there. And we would do these stupid things night after night. But this is the control Bill had. And to this day, I mean, we're all still friends, and the women that are still alive are still part of the group, you know. He is very good. He always runs under the Democratic ticket, but I doubt that he ever carried a card because he does not really believe in partisan politics.
And he did a lot for the city. I know just from for the library, he was in part responsible for instituting the gift book program at the library. And we've got so many books in the library with his name or the name of Art Selahowski on the plate. Bill always gave something to someone, didn't he?
Right.
Yeah.
See, that's where John McCrina and, well, Art Selahowski ended up as aides to Bill Hoffman when he was up in Lansing. Bill never forgets his friends. He, you know, helped us get the mobile meal program going. Vern Pebley and I incorporated in 1970, and we started the mobile meal program. Virginia Sauber ran it. She was working for the federal government at that time and decided to run for mayor and had to leave her job because of the Hatch Act. And she started working through the senior citizen program. Well, there already was programs going from the Area on Aging, and no way were we going to get financing. And Bill saw, and to this day, the Madison Heights Mobile Meal Program is a separate line item in the state budget. We don't go through the Area on Agency. We just get this money every year to run that program. And we've got Bill Hoffman to thank for that.
George Horkey.
George was a farmer, but a clever farmer. He was supervisor, and you talk about controlling that board. I mean, he controlled every individual on his township board. George was clever. He made a lot of money in this town, especially when Stevenson Highway went through. But George was set in his ways, and even though originally, because we were the ones that were always at the township meetings crying about something, he took us all in as friends, but he wasn't ready for incorporation, and he would not give in. And he's a staunch politician and a clever politician. He really was. You have to hand it to him. Yeah.
Leroy Ainsley.
Leroy was a friend of George Horkey. It used to be a joke at the township meetings. They're all sitting there, and the vote goes on. And Leroy and everybody say, George Horkey always voted first, which isn't according to Hoyle, but he did. And Leroy would say, I wasn't listening. Which way did you vote, George? And then that's the way Leroy would go. Leroy was a good person. He had vision, but he let George Horkey lead him around. He went on to be head of our planning commission in recent years, but he's passed away since then.
We have some members of the Madison Heights Historical Commission with us this evening. If any of you would like to ask Anne a question, if you'll give your name first and then ask her. Does anyone have a question they'd like to ask Anne?
Yes, I have a question.
Your name?
I'm Irene Hubbard.
Okay.
I'm a little confused about when you're talking about the first election. At this election, were you just voting on incorporating Madison Heights?
And electing 9 members to a charter commission. You did both at the same time in the first election.
And those 9 members, then how did they become mayor and council?
No, they were elected to write the charter. They had 2 years to write the charter. And through Harry Young's guidance, they did it in 6 months. The first charter was defeated. Then they rewrote the next one. First election, charter election. First incorporation charter commission was January of 55. The first charter election was June of 55. The second charter was December of 55. Then, at that time, too, you had a slate of officers that ran for mayor and council. That was another thing that the opponents of the first charter, they didn't like the idea of a 7-member council. They wanted 4 council and a mayor, which would only give you 5 individuals.
Does anyone have any other questions?
Yeah, my name is Margie Johnston, and one of the questions that I don't think we asked you was, once Madison Heights officially became a city, did you lose your interest in politics, and if not, what new areas did you become involved in?
Well, my husband, at that time, county supervisors were appointed, and he served on the county commission, and our interests strayed over there. Then, when they had to run for re-election, when the county became a home rule county, they had to run for election, and they became county commissioners. He won the election for county commissioners. It's a standing joke in this town among the UAW. I am labor associates, but I've never been, definitely pro-labor. At the same time, my husband decided to run for county commission. John Dewan, the Pac-Man from the UAW, who just recently passed away, ran against him. And I have the reputation in Oakland County of being the only individual that defeated John Dewan in an election, because what happened is it took in Madison Heights and Royal Oak. Well, like I said, now these go back to 69, so we were younger. And I went door-to-door in Royal Oak for him. And really, it was the Royal Oak vote that swung it, because labor on this end of town went for John Dewan, but he won the election. He won two elections on the county charter. It was very, very, very interesting. And then he decided, he was a member of the county hospital board, that he would like to be administrator over there. So he resigned his commission, became administrator of the county hospital, and Jim Doyon was appointed county commissioner to serve out his term. And since then, I'm still active with Madison Heights Democratic Club. I'm first vice chair of the Oakland County Democratic Party and first vice chair of the 14th District County Party.
And according to my records, you also served on the Board of Review.
Yes.
You were elected to that.
Yes.
I also don't know if you officially mentioned the first council that we had in Madison Heights. Can you tell us who they were?
It was Daryl Davis, Ted Krenn, John McCrina, Virginia Salbert, George Sargent, and Charles Edwards.
And the mayor was Lloyd Ferguson.
Mm-hmm. I can tell you an anecdote about that if you'd like. Lloyd Ferguson had a brother that was vice president of Norge Manufacturing. And the name Ferguson came up, and everybody thought that he was the brother. Lloyd was a very nice person, a very kind person, a very serving person. And he, too, had a following in this town. But this is how he was chosen to run on our slate.
The only other question I wanted to ask you is, did you remember the population in 1955 of Madison Heights?
16,000
people. 16,000 colored. Oh, okay. There was, I figure the total vote in 1955 to incorporate was 3,131. So that's roughly 20%, which is much better than our voting record today.
Very much. And then, take in consideration, Royal Oak, the West 8 Mile community couldn't vote in our incorporation, and that was a big help, too.
Any further questions?
Could I say, may I ask just a personal observation of you? First of all, if there was anything that you could change about Madison Heights, what would it be, and what is the reason you've lived here almost all of your life?
First of all, I'm not one for change. I lived in my home 38 years, and then 5 years ago sold it, and now I'm up here. I like the community. I like what Madison Heights offers, and it's home to me. It is, and it probably always will be. I wouldn't change anything. I think we're continually making progress. I think we have matured. our politics aren't as horrible as they used to be, as personal. So I think it's just a great town.
Anne, I want to thank you for agreeing to do this tape this evening. It'll now become part of our Madison Heights Historical Collection, and we hope to add others in the near future. Lois, before we close, Lois Myers has a question to ask Anne.
I just think this would add a little humor to it.
Sure.
At one time, we had two Democratic parties, and I'd like to have Anne tell you a little bit about that.
Oh, yes. We had two Democratic parties in town. There was our end of it, like members like Lois and I and Helen, but then Labor had their own. And it was John Dewan, Tony Olesinski, Earl Anderson, Stan Wise, Cecil Robinson. And there was a continual fight. They used to call us, at the county party, they used to call us Mad Heights. Because we were always up there screaming who was representing Madison Heights in the Democratic Party. Well, in 76, we finally ironed it all out. We said, have one Democratic chartered club. And then, see, there was the Bill Hoffman group. Bill was always anti-anything that Labor was. And he helped keep that feud going for quite a few years. Yeah, it was fun.
And once again, I want to thank you. And you've made this evening very enjoyable and informative.
Thank you.
Anne Edwards.